Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Abhayi Charanvinda Bhaktivinoda Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki? Jai. Translation. O son of Bharata, family, Diti after this went nearer to her husband. Her face lowered because of her faulty action. She spoke as follows. Purport. When one is ashamed of an abominable action, one naturally becomes down-faced. Diti came to her senses after the abominable sexual intercourse with her husband. Such sexual intercourse is condemned as prostitution. In other words, sex life with one's wife is equal to prostitution if the regulations are not properly followed. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Pashyatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation again. O son of the Bharata family, Diti, after this, went nearer to her husband. Her face lowered because of her faulty action. She spoke as follows. Hare Krishna. So I'd like to thank all the management here at Bhaktivedanta Manor for asking me to speak on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And for my own purification, I'd like to seek blessings of all the wonderful Vaishnavas who've assembled here, all the seniors, and all those watching online, as collectively we can look at these wonderful scriptures and seek some nectar from that. Let's see how we go along with this. So it may seem at first glance that this is a very short purport, isn't it? Say, quite a slight purport, but actually there is a lot going on there. In this purport, there are many, many aspects of the conversations that's been happening for the last few weeks and days, as you would have seen in your attendance during this wonderful Bhagavatam class. So, for example, Mother Diti's remorseful nature after committing an abominable act, isn't it? And her body language, we can talk about that. Why do these acts occur in one's life? We can talk about that. How lust overcomes the mind and intelligence and its relationship with the three modes of material nature. Varnashram Dharma is another aspect because this is the Grihastha ashram, right? Specifically focusing on that and the regulations of that ashram, as well as the Varnas and the regulations related to that. Examples of these and how to follow those regulations, we can look at that. And then also we can look at the character of Kashyapa Muni and Mother Diti. And, you know, how Kashyapa Muni is a Brahmana and Mother Diti is obviously a wife of a Brahmana. Then we see from the purport that Srila Prabhupada is using very strong words, prostitution. Within the Grihastha ashram, these are very strong words. So we can look at that. So many things we can look at. And then to combine it all together, well, what can we learn from this? What are the resolutions to all these issues that are presented amongst us in the purport today? Yeah. So we make a start because today also, as we know, is our dear Saras Prabhu's funeral. So we need to finish on time as well as talk about Sripad Madhvacharya. So let's go straight cracking into it. And so we can finish on time. So Mother Diti's remorse, it is actually a great Vaishnava quality that one feels genuine remorse. Shri Radha Gokulanand Bhagwan ki jai. after committing some mistake, isn't it? Or even after transgressing our principle of dharma, as it is in this case, the remorse must be genuine. Otherwise, it just becomes a showcase remorse, mithyachara, as it says in the Bhagavad Gita. Usually, these mistakes occur due to body consciousness and our relationship with the material senses in trying to gratify them. That's when they appear. But when someone commits mistakes, it is how they are, therefore, afterwards, after committing that mistake. Hare Krishna, welcome. Their whole body language, it should show morose. It should show genuine want to be improve in their next attempt at the same situation. Will they change? Her body language, her head is down, her shoulders are also down, no doubt. Her face is showing anguish and actually downtrodden. Potentially fear of the consequences of this transgression is also potentially within her. And all of these things would be showing in her body language, right? The next verse actually talks a little bit about that, which we won't cover today because obviously I'll be going into transgressing the dharma of giving class. I don't want to do that. And so she goes on to look at repairing some of the damage that's been done through the actions, and we'll look at how she goes on to do that tomorrow. These days people say, you know, when you do something and you feel guilty, people say, oh, don't worry, it's fine, isn't it? Don't worry, you'll be okay. But that is actually letting the mind get away with it, isn't it? When one feels remorseful, one feels guilty, they need to actually understand why they're feeling guilty. They need to understand what is it that we need to do in order to learn so that we don't make the same mistakes again. This happens to us all the time, day in, day out. We are transgressing so many things, but sometimes we're not even aware that the transgression has happened. So that's why it is said that the best action that we can do is to dovetail our free will for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If we actually dovetail our activities, then the necessity of feeling guilty, the necessity of actually wanting to transgress something goes away, because we are continuously dovetailing our activities, our actions for the pleasure of their lordships rather than pleasure of our senses. It is difficult to do, but it can be done. And that is actually the real nature of surrender, isn't it? So we know another great personality from this wonderful book, Srimad Bhagavatam, had committed a mistake and they also felt remorseful. I'm sure all of you know him, who I'm thinking of. Who do you think is that personality? Parikshit Maharaj, yes, yes. What did he do? What was his transgression? That he was feeling thirsty. And where did he go? In which rishi's ashram? Shamak Rishi. And what did he do? He took a dead snake and put it around the rishi who is in complete samadhi. He is in meditation. And what did Maharaj Parikshit feel? I'm the king. I've come. I'm thirsty. And you're not looking after me. Bodily consciousness, right? And so, okay, he's thirsty, of course. If he sees the personality who is in meditation, then he can go and find water or ask somebody else. No problems. Problem resolved. But something happened. Put a dead snake around him. And what was the outcome of that transgression? Sringi cursed him. Wonderful. He cursed him to death within 7 days. Okay, obviously, we know the pastimes of this. But how did Maharaj Parikshit feel after that? As soon as he came out of the act, afterwards, he felt extremely remorseful. And his attitude was, I'm not going to fix this. I'm not going to rebel. I'm not going to do any of those things. I'm going to see this as the will of the Lord. Dovetailing the act in the service of the Lord. So then he said, okay, what shall I do? I have 7 days. Right. I know what I need to do. We have a lifetime which can be as short or as long as 7 days, and we don't pick up the Bhagavatam. He went straight to the Ganges, and then he sat down and meditated, and all behold, the rest is history, as they say, it's written in the Bhagavatam. So the point is clear, right? So yeah, so many things we can talk about these personalities. So we could say, a pure devotee would say, my dear Lord, you can keep me or put me in any condition, but please don't let me forget you. Please keep me in association of your pure devotees. Lust overcomes mind and intelligence. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna warns Arjuna with a famous verse I'm sure you all know. Kamaisha krodhaisha rajaguna samudbhava mahasano mahapapma vidyanam ihavirtanam. Translation is, the lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion and later transformed into wrath. Yes. And which is all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. So although Kashyapa Muni had warned Madaditi time and time again, it's not right muhurat for such acts. It's not the right time. She was too much overcome by lust. She was too much overcome by the desire to have a son. Even though she knew it wasn't the right time. Because after all, she is the wife of a learned sage, a great sage. So she was a great wife. Lust is said to be in the mode of passion. But when combined with inappropriate time, transgression of dharma, it turns into the mode of ignorance. So this is what happens. And later on in this same section of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna in verse 40, Indriyani mano buddhir asya tistama muchate eta vimohata esha jnanam avritya dehinam. This is really important. This eta vimohata esha jnanam. Translation is, the senses, the mind and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. Lust covers all these and takes away our knowledge, our buddhi. And so when buddhi is gone, that means we drop into ignorance. Without knowledge, we're into ignorance, right? And so Madaditi was bereft of knowledge. Though she was a great wife of a great sage, full of knowledge, knew all the Vedic injunctions, what happened? She felt remorse after the act that she did this abominable action. And then that because she was put into ignorance by material nature, three modes of material nature. So they were in the grihastha ashram, varnashra ashram, has certain regulations. In fact, every ashram we know, the four varnas and the four ashrams. What are the four varnas? Brahmana, Kshatriya, Shudra. And what are the four ashrams? Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. Right? We're very tired this morning, right? Okay. Maybe we should do a super brain yoga like Janakinath Prabhu used to do in his classes. Say, let's all do super brain yoga. He used to get everybody standing. And what did he used to do? He used to get people to hold their ears like this and then crouch down. Maybe we should do that. Prayojana Prabhu will lead us. Just joking. So, we know the four varnas, we know the four ashramas, right? Each varnas and each ashramas have their specific rules and regulations, isn't it? So, and human beings, us living entities, must abide by these ashram rules. As we know, Brahmachari ashram, the Varnaprastha ashram and the Sannyas ashram, there is no connection with anything illicit in those ashrams. If you want anything illicit or sex with another partner, a woman or a man in that case, then you enter the Grihastha ashram. But there are rules and regulations also of the Grihastha ashram. We can't just go in there, okay, fine. It's a license to do whatever I want. No. is for begetting spiritual children. In fact, the act itself has got a long list of things that we have to do before the act. And then, once you've done, that's it. You've got the children. That doesn't mean you carry on. That's what Prabhupada is saying. If you do anything outside of the timing or any illicit activity, is regarded as prostitution. These are strong words by Prabhupada. So, grihastha ashram, before procreation, there's a ceremony performed. In fact, it is recommended that one chants 64 rounds before the act itself, because our mind has to be in the right frame, right consciousness. Because we want children who are, you know, going to be helpful to society, not going to be trouble to the family, to the parents, but also to society and the world at large. So the mind has to be in the right frame. The Lord has delineated all these rules and regulations not for restriction reasons, but for a specific reason. These are do's and don'ts of the material world, and they are written in our scriptures. They are very, very scientific. They're not just there to make our life, oh no, we can't do this, we can't do this, there's this rules, there's that rules. They're given by the acharyas for us to accelerate our path on this Krishna consciousness to perfection. For acceleration, our human body, this body that we've accepted away from the spiritual world, so that we can accelerate our activities and get back to the spiritual world. That's why these rules and regulations are there. Just like driving, there's a roundabout, there's traffic lights, they're there to control the traffic, so there is smooth running of the traffic, right? If somebody just transgressed those, you're going to get a ticket, you're going to get a fine, you're going to get 3 points, and after 12 points, license banned. So these rules are there for a purpose. They make a smooth transition from material world to the spiritual world, so that there's perfection. They're not there to simply be an impediment of sense enjoyment, as many may seem to think. These are just impediments on my sense enjoyment. I'm trying to get from A to B to see if I can get a rasagula somewhere. You know, yeah, maybe down in the pujari room, just there, some rasagulas are hiding, waiting to be consumed. But no, that's not sense enjoyment, is it? Maybe one or two is okay. Maybe a bucket is, but anyway. So the Lord hasn't delineated all these rules and regulations for just curtailing our sense enjoyment. No. When one breaks the rules and regulations and doesn't become repentant, then that's an issue. Because we don't learn and we may even fall down again. So the attitude is very, very important, is how we take on the learning, how we take on the teachings that's been done. The mind will say, oh, it's okay, you know, don't worry about it. But forever we can think it's okay, and decades will go by, and nothing will change. No character improvement, no learnings, none of that can happen. So then, every action has a positive or a negative reaction. So therefore, we have to be very, very mindful of how our actions are. Are they positive? Are they negative? Are they neutral? Are we learning something from every action? Like that. So the mind will always rebel. The mind wants to do sense gratification. And so we have to train it, just like we train a horse. You know, like that. Okay, I'm conscious of the time. We have quite a lot to cover. So in this regard, Bhagavad Gita 2:59 says, though the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, the taste of sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste is fixed in consciousness. So we have to give ourselves a higher taste in order to control the mind from the sense enjoyments. We have to do little austerities. We have to do some tapasya. That is required, because that can then control the mind. So, like for example, we have rules of maybe, okay, attending Mangal Arati. I don't know whether the register is still here, Mangalati register, I'm not too sure, but if it is, then you know, after three strikes, then you are in front of the Brahmachari ashram, or the Brahmacharini ashram. And then you're talking about, okay, so yes, I transgressed not attending Mangalarti, or I was late 3 times, 5 times, whatever. And then you have to have a responsible answer. So these little austerities are there. Prabhupada has given us the morning program. Attending morning program Mangalarti, what is one thing that one has to do in order to successfully attend a Mangalarti? Sleep early. Yes, it's such a simple answer, right? We have to plan Mangalarti the day before, the night before. Sleep early. What happens? Yes, I'm going to attend Mangalarti. And then 11 o'clock. Yes, I'm still doing my rounds. Oh, yes, I'm still have to do my reading. Oh, I didn't clean the ashram today. I need to clean the ashram. Or whatever it might be in the grihastha ashram. You know, grihastha life is very, very busy. Children, wife, husband, etc., work. And then you're trying to attend Mangalarti and class and so on. It's a bigger austerity, can be. So we can look at character, nature, and qualities of Diti and Kashyapa who are in a grihastha ashram. By doing tapasya, by giving the mind a higher taste, we develop good qualities. We develop great character because it gives us stronger ability to fight the onslaught of Maya. It gives us the ability to control our mind so that it can be guided towards spiritual things rather than towards sense gratification and material things. So after having committed the mistake, the attitude of Diti, both Diti and Kashyapa, points towards their great character, isn't it? And so because the attitude wasn't dismissive of the abominable act, the attitude was repentant and responsible. So, although they committed the great grave mistake, should we pass judgment on them? What do we think? Should we judge them? Oh, look, such a great sage, look what they've done. Are we qualified to pass judgment? No. Who are we to do that? You know, these personalities who appear in this exalted books like the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's phenomenal that their names are actually in the Bhagavatam. Isn't it? How many of you would like your names in the Bhagavatam? This is phenomenal personalities. They're not like an ordinary Tom, Dick and Harry from Bushy or Garston. They are exalted persons. Their names are in the Bhagavatam. This is a Mala Puranam. So these are exalted personalities. So everything that is written in the pages of Bhagavatam is for us to learn and so that we don't make the same mistakes. They're just doing their drama activity. They're just being the puppet for Krishna to teach us. So what are we supposed to learn from the mistakes of what happened to Diti today or during this verse? If Mother Diti had listened to her husband Kashyapa, who was actually her spiritual master, no? Because her husband, great sage, you know, regarded as a spiritual master in one sense. So this situation may not have occurred if she'd heeded his guidance. So similarly, Prabhupada has given us so many books. We have so many shiksha gurus. We have our guru, spiritual master, is constantly teaching us many, many things. But nowadays what happens is a tradition, it's a new generation thing. During Prabhupada's time, his disciples, Prabhupada would say, right, you go to Japan, you go to Korea, you go to China, and disciples would say, yes, Prabhupada, we'll go. Yes. Prabhupada said, don't worry, Krishna will provide everything. Okay, we'll go. We don't even speak the language, but we'll go to Korea. We go to China, we'll go to Russia. Now what happens? Guru Maharaj says, oh, you can do this preaching on this university. Yes, Guru Maharaj, I could, but I don't know whether I can do it. Maybe try again a different things. I like this, Guru Maharaj. Maybe I can do that. And then the spiritual master is, yes, okay, fine, you can do that, no problems. It's like a cheating, bartering thing, isn't it? So this was what's going on. Right now, there are so many instructions that we get constantly, but when we don't follow those instructions, what happens is we kind of like transgressing certain aspects of Dharma. And so what happens is we ought to be shamed. We ought to understand that we've transgressed something and try and learn from them and improve the next time. The decision is ours, whether we learn from the incident like Mother Aditi did or whether we don't, whether we follow the instructions, guidance given or we don't. It's up to us. But we have to, no matter what happens, we have to face the consequences of our actions, good or bad, right? And so Prabhupada condemns these, uses strong words as prostitution. I mean, this is serious, right? I mean, in the books of, in the pages of Bhagavatam, why does he do that? What is the purpose behind Prabhupada using such strong words? What do you think?
To cut.
Wake us up. Shake us up and wake us up. Prayajana Prabhupada said, to cut. Arjuna and Krishna were on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Arjuna and Krishna were together so many times before the battlefield, in a relaxed situation, in the quarters, eating together, so many things. So Krishna could have easily spoken the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna at any time, no? Peacefully given him all the instructions in so much detail. But no, he had to create the war. And in the middle of the war, when Arjuna was bewildered, boom, he gets the Bhagavad Gita. Why? Because we are alerted. Our consciousness is heightened. Our ability to take on the messages of importance is heightened. So it's important to understand, shockingly, that when we transgress Dharma, we have to be remorseful, we have to be repentant, we have to learn why we are transgressing day in, day out. So therefore, illicit means sex outside of marriage or sex within marriage but not regulated by Dharma, especially when divorced from responsibility and spiritual purpose. So like that, within the other three orders, as we said, there's complete restriction on sex, whereas Grihastha Ashram has a minute allowance, but that allowance is only for begetting godly children, like that. So yeah, when sex in marriage is based on mutual sense enjoyment, or motivated by lust rather than service, and disconnected from Dharma and Krishna consciousness, is when we are transgressing and we are not giving pleasure to the right personality, like that. So you may ask, well, what is the solution to all these issues that we're facing? What do we think? What should we do? What's the solution? That we don't transgress our instructions that we're given, the opportunities of service that we've been given. What should one do? Chant properly. Yes. Always remember Krishna and never forget him. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Because they say, Krishna Bulia, Maya Japatiya. We forget Krishna and Maya takes us. At every moment, Maya is looking for the opportunity to take us in, mess with the mind. Kali is the same. Kali Yuga is there, right? What has this person got? Are they hoarding something? Are they breaking the four regulatory principles? Maybe I'll just go in, get in there, and that's it. Maya and combination of Maya and Kali. That's what happens. And so, Haridas Thakur, how many rounds was he chanting? Or how many names of Krishna was he chanting? 300,000, right? 300,000, right? Okay. Constantly chanting. He was also presented with a similar situation. A prostitute had come to him. But he didn't falter. He said, oh yes, you wait. I have my conversations I'm having, my daily conversation with whom? Krishna. Practically 24/7. I mean, how many hours does it take to chant 300,000 rounds? Who's a mathematician here can calculate very quickly? Rather, it's 300,000 names, not 300,000 rounds. Sorry, my mistake. How many rounds is that? 192. 192 is 173. 192. 173, right? So how long would it take to chant 173 rounds continuously? 25 hours. What did you say, Sushimas Rabbi? 1 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon. Wow, that's what he used to do, right? It's about 10 to 12 hours if you went continuous, but it could be up to 15, 16 hours minimum. It's a lot of rounds. But if you're continuously engaged, then none of these things actually impact us. If you continue to engage in service, in so many things that we are given, Prabhupada has given us so much. And so there are two verses in the Bhagavatam. 12.3.51 is one. Kalidoshari je rajan asti eko mahan guna kirtana deva krishnasya mukta sangha param vraje. My dear king, although this age of Kali is full of faults, but there is one good quality about this age. Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, one can be freed from the material bondage and be promoted to the transcendental realm. Right? And these are the last two verses of chapter 3 of Canto 12. 52 says, Kitaya dayata vishnam taya Treyatayam Najotamakai Dvapare Parichayayam Kalotat Dari Kirtanat. Whatever result was obtained in Satyuga by meditation on Vishnu, and in Treta Yuga by performing sacrifices, and in Dvapara Yuga by serving the Lord's lotus feet, can be obtained in Kali Yuga simply by chanting Hare Krishna mantra. So we should continuously, for our own purification, chant and do this bona fide tapasya. This is the austerity of this Kali Yuga, right? This age. The bona fide process of purification is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Is that enough? Is that enough? Chanting rounds. Yes, is equal to? Jai, Srinivas Prabhu ki Jai. So 100 names are chanting, the names of Lord Chaitanya, the holy name. Yes, similar to what they says in this verse 52. Yes, yes, wonderful. Confirmed, you see? Shankar Bhagavan confirmed. So, important to have meditation, to have our mindset engaged 24 hours in Krishna's service, dovetailing our activities to Krishna's will. Shri Radha Gopinath Bhagwan ki, Sutaram Lakshmanaman ki, Varnitai ki. So we have like 10 minutes or so. What I wanted to do is also talk about the Tirubhautiti, that is, of Sripad Madhvacharya today. Such an exalted personality in our parampara line. If you look on the back of the Bhagavad Gita or other books, there's an entire parampara line, disciplic succession written. Krishna, Brahma, Narada, Vyasa, and Madhvacharya. Fifth in the line. What an exalted personality that we are so fortunate to have in our line, in our platform here. As ISKCON is standing on the platform that's being created by Sripad Madhvacharya. The great Vaishnava Acharya who established the Brahma Madhva Sampradaya, which later became to know because of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. He was a divine Vaishnava, incarnation of Vayudev,